I saw you on the School of Hard Knocks.
How many companies do you own?
Oh, a lot.
How many?
I'd have to count them up, but several dozen.
Before we get into how you made it, I want to know who you were before.
There was one day that really just put a maximum level of stress on my heart. And I found that my wife had been crying, like tears I had never seen before, like someone died. And when I asked her what was wrong, she said, Chris, we have rent due in 5 days. We can't pay for it. That was a moment that changed me forever because I found a way with no money and no credit to basically buy 25 homes. Those 25 homes were rented out and started a chain reaction of $3,300 turning into $1.6 million. That same strategy is just as alive and well today.
Should people be looking for a brand new home or should they look for something that is way below market value because they can put construction into it?
Here's what most people are thinking. I want the nicest place that I can afford. And I'm like, that's the dumbest decision a human can make. Let me show you how anyone gets wealthy.
We've talked a lot about doing things OPM, other people's money. Can you explain that?
Other people's money is how you earn an infinite return. To break it down.
But then don't you always owe them?
Let me give you an example.
Ladies and gentlemen, today we have the pleasure of welcoming Chris Krohn, a powerhouse in the world of real estate investing, business coaching, and personal development. Born in Orem, Utah, Chris's journey began with humble beginnings and financial struggles during his college years at Brigham Young University. Determined to break free from financial hardship, he dove into the real estate market, acquiring 25 homes before he even graduated, a move that set him on a path to long-term wealth. Today, Chris owns and manages an expansive portfolio of around 400 properties across the U.S. and has conducted over $2 billion in real estate transactions. He is the author of several books, including The Straight Path to Real Estate Wealth and Have It All, and shares his experience with millions through his Limitless TV YouTube channel. In our conversation today, Chris breaks down his real estate investment strategies, including house hacking and identifying prime markets like Central Florida, Memphis, Alabama, and Oklahoma. Now, these areas might seem foreign to you and something you don't want to get involved in. But I picked this guest specifically because, you know, creating wealth is very misunderstood. I know there are some of you sitting there wondering about your purpose, wondering how you can, you know, have some financial freedom. And this guy really talks about it. So I think it's an important episode to listen to. He gives his expert take on why now is the time to invest despite interest rates and explains the key difference between good debt and bad debt. Beyond real estate, Chris is a firm believer in the power of mindset and surrounding yourself with success. Today, we're diving into his journey, his strategies, and how you too can build financial freedom. So let's get into it. Hi, Chris. Thank you so much for joining me on Misunderstood today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Where are you, as a matter of fact?
I'm in Utah.
Oh, Utah. Amazing. Okay. All right. So before we get into why you're here, I want to get the background on you because the way I found you is because I saw you on the School of Hard Knocks.
Yes.
And he only interviews guys that have made it. You know what I mean? So, before we get into how you made it, I want to know who you were before, what your motivations were, how you grew up, and how you got to where you are now.
I was born in a Christian family with 8 other brothers and sisters and taught with strong, I think, traditional conservative values. And my dad was a German immigrant that said, if you don't get good grades and go to college, you won't really get anywhere in life. And so I think by the time I landed on the college scene, I had just served a 2-year Christian mission for my church. And basically my whole life was now going to be centered around becoming a doctor. And that was kind of, I think, everything playing out the way my parents wanted it to. And that's also kind of when everything fell apart.
How did things fall apart?
Well, first, for starters, I wasn't smart enough to be a doctor. Like, I was in a weeder class where only 10% were going to get A's. I had a decade of sciences ahead of me, and in organic chemistry, I got a C. So I retook the class. I got a tutor. I worked 3 times harder, and then I got a C-. And I'm like, oh, like, I'm not going to be a doctor. And even worse, I can't find any other degree here that I want. And if I don't go to college and get a degree, like according to like what I grew up with, I probably won't amount to anything.
Right. So that's interesting because as a man, I think it's harder than a woman to figure out, well, not to find your purpose, but like as a man, you feel like you want to be able to support yourself, of course, and possibly your family. So that's got to be a very stressful thing to be able to find your purpose that you're going to go and make some money. So how did you figure it out?
Well, after the third day of college, I actually met the woman that I was going to marry a year later.
No way.
So I felt the stress, like as a sophomore in college, like, oh, now I really have to figure out the game. And so that just added a whole lot more. I don't even know like what I want to be when I grow up. And I remember there was one day that really just put like a maximum level of stress on my heart. And I had gotten this crappy telemarketing job. So I was working full time while I had the stress of going to school full time. I was taking out Pell Grants. I had to put myself through college. And I remember that balancing these two full time jobs, just I didn't like my one job. And I didn't like that I was wasting money in college without knowing what I was going to do or become. And so I decided to come home from school one day a little early just to be with my wife for a little bit because we spent so little time together. And when I came home, I walked in and had this really like dark impression, like before I even knocked on her basement hole in the ground apartment, I knew something was wrong. And when I finally knocked and came in, I found that my wife had been crying, like tears I had never seen before, like someone died. And when I asked her what was wrong, she said, "Chris, tuition's due in 3 weeks and we don't have money for it. We're going to go into debt." And I was kind of like, I was thinking, I don't know, is that like that's a problem, but that's kind of normal for, you know, poor college kids. And then she said, "No, Chris, we have rent due in 5 days. We can't pay for it." And I thought, oh, this is getting more real. But right. Rachel, it was then she spoke up and said that she had tried to go grocery shopping to buy a week's worth of groceries and literally bounced the checkbook, if people still remember what those are. And she basically ran home embarrassed, empty-handed, and hungry. And that was a moment that changed me forever because not only did I not know what I was going to do, but I also didn't even know how I was going to pay for our poor lifestyle then.
Oh my gosh, Chris. All right. I love this story though. So what happened? How did you figure it out?
Well, I actually made a decision in that moment. I decided that I would do whatever it took to not be in this situation ever again.
Yeah.
Because my parents fought about money. And I'm like, I'm just going to reincarnate the same problems in my marriage. Mm-hmm. And I felt this motivation just well up inside of me. And so I did a couple of things. One is I started going on the lookout and I started looking for something outside of college. And within 6 months, I met three people who had each made over $10 million in real estate. And I caught the bug and I'm like, I'm going to learn from them. The first one, I showed up at his house at 9 o'clock at night and he wrote me off and said, "I never want to see you again," because I was being too forward. The other two said yes. And by the time I graduated college, I found a way with no money and no credit to basically buy 25 homes. Those 25 homes were rented out and there was a surplus of $12,000 left over every month so that when I graduated college, I didn't need to graduate and get a job. I actually graduated and didn't need a job because I was making six figures passively. And that was the beginning of everything really moving in a new direction.
Wow. So this is crazy. And I love this story. So I want to get into this because you've done a lot of things. You're an author, you're a motivational speaker. You teach people how to invest in real estate, but I want to focus on a conversation about financial freedom.
Yeah.
I think for women and men, I mean, it is so important. And actually I want to talk about women for 1 second, because I think that you, and correct me if I'm wrong, more so than maybe everyone, believe in like the traditional lifestyle of a woman.
Yeah.
Am I correct?
Yeah. Like, my wife doesn't work. We have four kids. She takes care of the kids. And so we're very traditional that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I love that. And I want to talk about that for a second, but not everybody has someone like you that she can lean on. For me, I'm a single 49-year-old woman. I raised my daughter who's 12 years old. I don't have that person to take care of me. So financial freedom is a very big deal for me because it's a fear that kind of is underlying in my body of like, what am I going to do if I don't have XYZ? Where will I go? I can't go to my parents. I can't go to a man because I'm not married. How will I make this work? And I think in this day and age, you see women turning to seeking arrangement, turning to OnlyFans, turning to different sorts of lifestyles that are not like they were
Yeah.
You know, even 20 years, 10 years ago, where, you know, it was like people are doing other things to support themselves in a way that might be more sexual, more, you know, having untraditional relationships. So, like, first of all, in your mind, how important is financial freedom?
Financial freedom for me was actually really critical in my early 20s because my wife told me, she said, I'm not going to work. Like, I'm not going to be a financial support to the family. And I'll be very honest, I was upset. Not that she wasn't going to work, but I was frustrated that I felt all of this pressure to be the traditional man that had to work. And I was like, I can't imagine finding a job that I'm going to like. Yeah. I'm going to work 40, 50, 60 hours a week for the next 40 years, and I'm going to hate it. And with every passing year, I'm going to hate myself a little bit more. I'm going to feel like I let my goals and my dreams go, because I couldn't even imagine financial freedom being a possibility. Because when you get a job, no one gets a job to become financially free. That's something you got to do in a business or by owning investments. And so I was starting with nothing. And that's the frustration that I had. But I'll tell you, I said, I'm so pissed that it is this way. I said, I'm going to figure out how to become financially free so fast that I'm never going to get locked up in this stupid 40-year game anyway. And so what that did is that caused me to find the legitimate ways that I could do that. And when I came upon real estate, I didn't have any interest in real estate. All real estate was a money game. And what I needed was a money game that I could learn and master so that I didn't actually have to have a job. So financial freedom for me meant I don't have an active income. It's got to be passive. My money's got to work for me, even if I don't have a lot. And then I got to learn how to use OPM, other people's money. Mm-hmm. If I can find the right winning system with those things, then maybe, just maybe, I can get to a spot where I don't have to work, but the money keeps flowing in.
Okay, so this is great. So real estate is the ticket kind of that got you financial freedom. So I want to focus on that because I know you have a lot of spokes and you can teach people a lot of different ways to get happy, to get financially free. But this is a way that you think can make somebody a lot of money and become a millionaire in a couple of years.
Yes.
Of course. Okay, so speaking of real estate, how do people even get started? What if somebody from the basics, they don't even have this extra cash to get involved?
Well, I'll tell you how I started. I started with nothing but a pile of debt. My credit wasn't developed. And my mentor said, here's what you got to do. Stay at your job for 2 years, because I hated my job and I had 1 year down. He said, I need you to stay for another year. And I'm like, I know you don't like this place, but I want you to stay. Make the sacrifice. Mm-hmm. Number two, I want you to get two more lines of credit because you have one credit card. The banks are going to want to see that you have two or three. And then number three, I need you to use them, keep them paid off, so that the banks see you're responsible with your credit. And number four, you gotta save up $5,000 in the bank. And for a poor kid like me, it took me 14 months to do all four of those things. And 14 months later, I had $5,000 in the bank. I had used my credit card, so I got myself established, and I had had my job for that 2 years. And at the earliest possible moment, I did what's called house hacking, which is I found a really good deal on a house. The house, I bought it for $40,000 less than it was worth because my mentor helped me find a good deal. And I bought it with literally a 3% down payment, just like people can do today. And I rented out the basement, which basically covered the whole mortgage. So we were living for free. And 12 months later, after I bought it, I pulled the equity out of the house because of the equity. And I used the first house to buy the second house. So
got it.
I basically cheated the system because you're supposed to put a 20% down payment when you buy an investment property.
Right.
I just put 3% down on one home, used the equity to buy a second, and used the second home to buy the third, and started a chain reaction of basically $3,300 turning into $1.6 million.
That's insane.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
So do you think, I mean, that wasn't like yesterday. So is that a possibility for people today? Can they start by just putting in 3%?
I help two different kinds of people. The first one are people who are starting from nothing and they house hack and do just what I did. That same strategy is just as alive and well today. The second is for people that have been maybe at their job for a decade or two and they're like, oh, I'm still poor, but I've been putting money in 401ks and IRAs and trying to pay off a house. I bet I can use some of my equity or 401k or IRA money to go start building a portfolio, and they can, and that's a way for them to get in the game.
Got it. I have a quick question on debt. What are your thoughts on debt? Do you think people should be working to pay that off, or you think that's fine to have debt?
It depends what you're talking about. I love business debt and I hate consumer debt. Like if you listen to Dave Ramsey, he's going to tell you all day long that debt is evil. And I'm like, I don't agree with that. If you're buying a boat, if you're loading up money you don't have on a credit card, if you're buying consumer debt, that's bad because it costs you money. But every time I buy a house, you better believe I'm going into debt, and I love it. When I buy that house, I get tax benefits. Someone else is going to pay it off for me. Like, how cool is that? That I have literally every day I buy a house and tell someone to pay it off for me. And then I get the tax strategies. I get the positive cash flow. I get the appreciation. But mark my words, every year I am going millions. Every month I go millions of dollars in debt. And I love every penny of it, because the more debt I have, the more money I make. That's a good debt and it makes you money. So whether you love or hate debt depends on what kind it is.
Right.
You know, I love a good glow up, but let's talk about a real game changer for your daily routine. That's Amazfit. What if your smartwatch can do more than just track steps? What if it actually helped you live better, move smarter, and feel amazing? I have such a great product for you guys. I'm so excited to tell you about it. Amazfit isn't just a smartwatch. It's your personal wellness coach with advanced fitness tracking, 24/7 heart rate monitoring, and even stress management tools. It keeps you connected to your health in real time. Whether you're crushing a workout, managing a busy schedule, or just trying to get better sleep, Amazfit has your back. It has 160 plus workout modes, from swimming to running, advanced sleep monitoring. It literally has everything. You will never get bored. You will never find something that it doesn't have. I'm really obsessed with it. I've been using it, and let me tell you, it's sleek and stylish. I wear it every day. I wear it every night. It's super comfortable. It lasts up to 10 days on a single charge. No more stressing over dead batteries midday. Plus, with built-in Alexa and tons of sports modes, it's like having a personal trainer on your wrist. The Zepp app has made tracking my fitness, calories, and even sleeping better. So if you're ready to take your fitness and wellness to the next level, check out Amazfit. Head to amazfit.com/understood to grab yours today and start living smarter with a 10% off discount. Again, it's amazfit.com/understood for 10% off. Holistic Goddess has been such a trusted resource for me on my health journey. One product I really wanted to highlight is their Holistic Menopause Support by PhD Health. It's been a game changer for me during perimenopause, and here's why I love it. It eases discomfort. It really helps with hot flashes and mood swings. The ingredients in it, including creatine, support mental sharpness. I feel more focused and clear-headed, which is so important for my busy days. Go to holisticgoddess.com and use code UNDERSTOOD for 15% off all orders.
So for people that are listening to this and thinking, okay, I like what he's saying, here are some questions that I'm thinking ahead of time, though. What if you go in, you purchase this house for 3% to 20%, whatever it is, and you can, and you're doing it for an investment property? What happens if you can't find a renter? I guess the question before that is, how are you finding a house in the right space, and how do you know that you're making the right purchase?
Well, it's so easy to do it wrong in the beginning. I had a mentor, and I would tell anyone that if you're going to go into that game, don't do it as a lone wolf. I think it's a mistake to take risks alone. Take risks with experts. And so I had experts that literally babysat my first 100 purchases. And I didn't lose money on my first 100 purchases because I had an expert with me. So when your questions of how do I find a good deal? How do I find the right tenant? How do I insulate myself from the renter beating up the house or never even moving in the first place? Mm-hmm. That's all of those answers are actually backed by data and coefficients of experts that actually know what they're talking about, because your first month, the house could go unrented. But right. by the third month, it's going to be rented out. Like when I buy, you know, when I buy 500 homes, I know that it takes an average of 21 days to get them rented in that particular zip code during that particular season. That knowledge is powerful because, sure, out of one in 100 homes, could one go 4 months unrented? Yeah. And I've got a backup plan for that as well.
Right. Okay. A couple questions when people heard that you were going to be on. Can you explain the pros and cons of investing in real estate now, and what factors should potential investors consider before making that decision?
Yeah. In general, I hate real estate. I think real estate is filled with cons. I think real estate in general is awful. But when I say I like real estate, I'm actually talking about one tiny little niche. So I have like this tiny little sliver strategy that I use that makes me tens of millions of dollars. And by the way, my real estate takes me 1 hour a month. So it's just as passive today as it was then, even though my portfolio has gotten bigger. I've done $2 billion of real estate transactions, over 6,000 projects, and it's only getting easier, but that's because I have the right kind of strategy. For me, I buy single family homes below the median in the top markets, and then I hold them for 5 to 7 years, and then I sell them and I tripled my portfolio.
When you say top markets, give me some examples.
Central Florida is the highest growth appreciating market in the country right now. And right now I'm averaging between 10 and 12% annual, appreciation. Because I only put 20% down on the properties, that means that I have my multiplication factor of 5 on my appreciation. So I'm on my last 10 years, year over year, on my last 2,130 homes, I'm averaging 60% a year on my money. So when you put your money in the bank and you get like, you know, 0.5% or 1%, I'm getting 60%. That means that my money is doubling every 15 months. And that's using this exact same strategy. So Central Florida will allow me to get those ROIs. Okay. Memphis, Alabama, Jonesboro, and Oklahoma. Those are the other four markets. So out of 324 markets in the US, I only invest in those five because that's where I get the most cash flow. And that's also where I get the most growth.
Okay. And in talking about strategy, should people be looking at what they think they can get for rent based on what they're spending on the house? Let's say it's $500,000. Does that mean you get $600 a month? I don't really know. How does that work? How does that translate? Yeah.
So when you buy a home, it produces an ROI. That stands for a return on investment. And a home actually has four different ROIs. You're talking about one of the four, which is called a cash on cash ROI. It means that I put cash in, and then how much cash am I getting back? In my markets, cash on cashes can range anywhere from 2% to 7%. So when I go into a cash flow market like Jonesboro, I'm getting 5, 6, and 7% cash on cash. What that really means is that I have a very healthy cash flow of hundreds of dollars every month on every purchase in that market. Florida, right now, because the prices have gone up so high and the rents haven't caught up with the rates,
right,
it means that right now cash flow is squeezed and a cash on cash might be closer to 2%, but my growth is so big that it actually outweighs it. And in a couple of years, rents will catch up and my cash on cash will increase.
But like mathematically, again, let's say I'm spending $500,000 on a house and you have, you know, whatever the mortgage, I don't have a calculator in front of me, but whatever the mortgage will be and what you have to spend on it monthly, you know, is there something that you're looking at that you're saying to your clients, you have to, you know, make sure you are making $500 on top of it or whatever?
It is. Yeah. So let me actually put it in different terms. So when I buy a home in Jonesboro, I buy a brand new 4-bedroom, 2.5-room, 2.5-bath for $190,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That market is taking place in Blue Oval City. And why did I pick that market? Because Ford Electric just moved in and built an $11 billion plant that requires 11,000 new jobs, and they don't have enough houses. So they're putting in temporary trailer parks. The houses that I'm building and buying brand new for under $200,000, in the next 5 years will be worth $325,000 to $400,000.
Right.
So that's what makes that one of the top markets for me. So when I go in and buy that $200,000 house, I already know up front that before I pull the trigger on it, I put together a prospectus. And that prospectus tells me more or less what my cash flow is going to be. I'll look at the comps for the rents in the area. I'll know that those homes are going to have a mortgage right around $1,200 a month. And I know that my rent is going to be $1,700 a month. So I'm going to have a $500 a month positive cash flow. In other words, before I buy a house, I've crunched all my numbers and I have all of that information.
Right. That just reminded me, have you ever seen those articles about different countries that are trying to get people to come in and they're like, come buy a house for $100.
We'll give you a castle for free, right?
Yeah. That always sounds amazing to me. Yes. Tell me why that's a pitfall or why it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's never a good deal. It's always a bad deal. It's going to be a money pit. What's happening is those countries are saying that we're experiencing economic winter. Economic winter is when the population is not replacing the population. So for example, in America, if we have 350 million people, if our birth rates are at 2.0, that means that two people are giving birth to two kids, then it means that without migration or immigration, we will maintain 350 million people in this country and hence don't need more homes and we don't need less. If you take a look at Japan in the 1970s, they already started experiencing economic winter where entire cities started getting shut down. And this is happening all across Europe. And so what you're hearing about is they're saying, oh no, we as a government are going to give you free homes and tax incentives or money just to move here because we have a population problem. Mm-hmm. America is not scheduled to have that problem for the next 50 years.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good to know. But speaking about that, I want to talk about like upgrades and stuff. Let's say you've bought a house, and also even thinking about those homes, I always imagine like it's a castle, but it's like that movie Money Pit, which was one of my favorites always. Yeah. Should people be looking for a brand new home, or should they look for something that is way below market value because they can put in, some construction into it?
I think before someone becomes an investor, they have to become a really smart home buyer. And so most people are looking for a home, and I would say look for a home and a house. And what I mean by that is a home is where you're going to live. So if you're doing a house hack and you're going to put 3% down, don't just be thinking, here's what most people are thinking. I want the nicest place that I can afford. And I'm like, that's the dumbest decision a human can make. Let me show you how anyone gets wealthy. It starts with paying your most important bill. Your most important bill is not your mortgage or your rent. It's not your cell phone bill, and it's not even taxes to the government. The most important bill you pay is yourself. You're the worker. You're the one who's earning the money. You've got to pay yourself. And you're like, well, Chris, what am I paying myself for? You're paying yourself a minimum of 20% of every dollar you make that you set aside to invest in your future. Mm-hmm. Now, if a person does that, I'm telling them that they are only allowed to spend 80% of what they make on their lifestyle. 20% needs to go into a piggy bank called, I'm going to buy investments. I'm going to buy businesses. I'm going to buy real estate. I'm going to buy stuff where my money works for me. That can't happen if you're buying as much house as you possibly can. So when the bank says, oh yeah, you qualify for $352,000, go look for a $270,000 house. Why? Because you got to have excess money, period. And then you look at that house as an investment project where you might live in it today, but after 1 year of living in my house, I moved out and I turned it into an investment property. Does that mean that that when I bought the house, I had already underwritten it as an investment property? Yeah. I already knew I was buying it $40,000 below the market. I already knew what my positive cash flow would be the moment I moved out of it. When I moved out of it, I made $550 each month on that house until I sold it and made $65,000.
I have a question. What are your thoughts on those like foreclosure notices that you see where they're doing the, you can go and you can make an offer on houses that are foreclosed. Also, can you get a good deal there, or is that also a bunch of bullshit?
No, it's not bullshit. That's actually a strategy. There's like 30 major strategies of how to make money in real estate. Some focus on cash flow. some focus on, you know, buying properties under value. There's a lot of different strategies that you can play in the game. Foreclosures hasn't been a very big deal for the last several years, but now they're starting to creep up because these higher mortgages and people buying more than they can afford, we're starting to see more and more homes go back to the banks. And banks are not in the business of holding real estate themselves. They love to lend you money on real estate. They don't want to own real estate because it hurts their fractional lending ratio. You see, when I open up a new bank account at Chase and I put $1,000 in the bank, the bank is allowed to keep 100 physical dollars and then lend 900 fake dollars to people in the form of other loans. So they're basically inventing money at that ratio and then making money on that. So, but when they have real estate on the books, it hurts that ratio. And then all of a sudden they can't lend nearly as much. So they hate owning real estate. Hence, they'll sell it for a deep discount. So foreclosures can be a place where you get really, really good deals.
Okay. All right. Now let's say you're a homeowner. How do you maximize the value of your property? And what are the most effective upgrades for improvements before selling or renting? Like, should people redo that carpet? Should they redo the kitchen, the bathroom, or should they leave it and let the people deal with it?
There's actually a mathematical analysis that you need to calculate based on whether you're in a buyer's market or a seller's market. So for example, we are missing a lot of inventory in the country right now, which means that you can get away with selling a house with ragtag carpet and it hasn't been repainted. But because there's not enough homes and there's enough eager beavers, especially watch this, rates are coming down. Last week, the markets tanked, right? We saw the NASDAQ drop 1,000 points. We saw $2 trillion evaporated out of the market. And right now we're seeing the rates come down. Zillow is now calling for 5.9. We're out of the 8 range. And with 3 more potential rate cuts, Rachel, before the end of the year, if those rates drop below 5.25%, you're going to see the prices of real estate skyrocket again. So in that kind of market, you don't have to fix anything up. In a market where you have a surplus of inventory, you kind of need for your area to have the nicest, most fixed up house. Now, you should, by the way, never fix up your house more than what the neighbors are. So, for example, if granite is standard in your neighborhoods, then you should do granite. If Formica is standard, then you should do Formica. You shouldn't actually, if you put in nicer things than all the other houses, you won't actually get that money out. All you'll do is sell your home faster because you're only affecting the perceived value of the real estate.
Right. But do you think that throwing wallpaper on the wall and doing like minimal things can also really change the outcome of what you're going to get?
No.
Or you feel like you have to invest in some of the good?
It depends. It depends on what's actually selling in the market. Everything is based on comps. So if the last 5 homes weren't fixed up, you shouldn't fix up your home. Now you can run the math and be like, oh, Chris, what if I put in $10,000 of upgrades? No. Let's go crazy. I'm going to put in granite. We're going to do a $50,000 kitchen remodel. I'm going to also put in a gold toilet on the throne room. And I'm going to put $100,000 in. I'm like, cool. Your house will sell so fast, but it won't sell for more money because a gold toilet, even though it in and of itself is valuable, doesn't actually increase the value of the price per square foot. So there's a lot of ridiculous things that people will do that are above and beyond what the market in their area is doing.
Right. Okay. I get that. Is there a difference between what you do in upgrades on the interior versus doing in your landscaping? Like, does the landscaping even matter? Like for me, I live in Florida. I have almost 2 acres.
Yeah.
I'm not planning on selling my place, but like I just put in a pickleball court. And in my mind, when I spent the money, I was like, well, for resale value, this will really help me. But who the hell knows? And it was a lot of money.
Yeah. So the reality is real estate is valued. The house is valued separate than the property. And so when someone says, I put $200,000 into my landscaping, you won't get $200,000 out. Landscaping is the biggest money pit where you generally don't get money out. But if you add amenities like a pickleball court, you can make your house sell quicker. You can make it sell faster and you're going to beat out the competition. Are you going to get all that money out? It depends on the market and it depends on a number of factors. But often no. In a higher price range, like, you know, when you get into the 7-figure status, those things can make a difference. But the closer you get to the median and below, no, you generally don't.
Got it. Okay. Another question from a listener. How should first-time home buyers approach the current market? What are the common mistakes to avoid?
Well, the number one mistake is they're waiting. They actually think that waiting for rates to come down is a smart move. Now, they might be doing that so that real estate matches their budget. But I can mathematically show you that waiting 2 years for rates to come down versus what will happen over the next 2 years with the appreciation of the house, you're actually going to lose money on the value upside of the house by waiting for rates to come down to manage your budget. Now, everyone should manage their budget anyway, but waiting in real estate always costs people money. And right now, for the last 2 years, the market has been on hold. I, as an investor, have not. I've been buying as much as I possibly can, and I'm being rewarded for it, and I'm making money hand over fist. But unfortunately, most people are susceptible to listening to the media and the news, and they believe weird things like high interest rates are bad. In my world, the difference between an 8% interest rate and a 5% interest rate has this much of an impact on the overall ROI. You almost don't even feel it.
But we all keep hearing like, oh, we're going to be in a recession. Keep your money tight because you don't know what's going to happen. What would you say to people that think that?
We are in a recession. We've been in a recession, and Biden economics hasn't wanted to admit that we're in a recession. We've been in a recession for the last 2.5 years. Right now, they've been changing the definition so that no one has to really own it, but business owners are feeling it. We right now have, for this quarter where we're at in the economy, we have more companies going bankrupt nationwide than we had during the pandemic when people weren't allowed to even open a business. So we are in a recession. And when you are in a recession, you do need to hold on to your money, and you do need to be smart, and you do need to be careful. You need to have money for a rainy day.
How do you think the current state of politics is going to affect everything this November?
I think it depends very much who we elect. I think if we elect a Democrat, it's going to be bad for business. I think if you elect a Republican, it's going to be good for business. And right now, business sector is what's hurting. 50% of our country's GDP comes on the backbone of small business owners. And what we really need, I feel, is a Republican president. I feel like that's going to help our economy a whole lot more than having Kamala Harris in the White House.
Interesting. Okay.
But by the way, I get to win either way, because if Kamala's elected, it's great for real estate. Because Democrats make financial decisions that hurt the economy, and real estate's a hard asset, so it goes up in value. So when they print money we don't have, real estate goes up in value. When they make decisions that increase inflation, real estate goes up in value. So it's kind of like, elect a Democrat if you want real estate values to go up, and elect a Republican president if you want businesses to thrive better.
Right. Okay. You have something called you have a Clever Summit 2024 coming up in September here in Florida. Can you tell people about that and why they
I'm one of the speakers. I'm one of 20 different speakers that are joining forces with Cody Sperber for Clever Summit 2024. It's happening in Hollywood, Florida, right next to Miami. And it's happening September 13th, 14th, and 15th. And it's a big deal because it's the largest, think of it like Real Estate Comic-Con. It's the largest real estate event of the entire year. Thousands of investors come out looking for market updates, understanding the economy, and then meeting people that they can do deals with. Events like that are where people who are nobodies become multimillionaires in very short periods of time. And so this
Explain.
Because deal making usually requires three different components. Someone needs money. Someone needs a deal, and someone needs to do the deal.
Right.
Well, when you come to an event like this, there's the room is filled with people with money, people with deals, and people that are willing to put in the sweat equity. So what ends up happening is a lot of organic partnerships end up forming up and coming together. So while everyone's learning about real estate, learning about this economy and the strategies that are working best, they then find the people that they're doing their next deals with.
You've talked a lot about doing things OPM, other people's money. Can you explain that?
Yeah, other people's money is how you earn an infinite return. So to break it down—
But then don't you always owe them?
Well, it depends. Like, let me give you an example. Okay. If I have $10,000 and if I go buy a boat, my boat is a liability. It only goes down in value. It gets used, it gets wear and tear. It needs money put into it, right? So buying a boat is a good example of a liability because it goes down in value. But let's just say I put $10,000 towards a house. And let's just say that that house makes me $200 every single month. Let's say that house goes up 10% in value that next year. Let's say that house gives me tax benefits. Well, that $10,000 is not a liability. It's an asset, because what it's doing is it's increasing my asset base. And so in the beginning, you have to use your own money to cause deals. What do you do when you run out of money? Well, if you can find really good deals and use someone else's money, like most typically people are using OPM all the time. If you put 3% down on a house, and then that house goes up. You know, I was in Miami on Fresh and Fit. It's another podcast. And Fresh put $10,000, a 3% down payment down on a house. In the last 4 years, it's gone up $350,000 in value. Well, if we want to calculate his ROI.
Explain that. Wait, people listening are going to be like, what? It's going to go over their head. Tell me exactly.
Bought his house for $300,000 and it's now worth $650,000 because real estate has gone up in value the last several years. So right. He only put $10,000 down. If he were to sell his house today, he's going to net at least $300,000. That's a 3,000% return on his money.
But I know people listening are like, I've looked at real estate. There's no way that someone will let me just put $10,000 down. I don't have the credit. I don't have this, that, the whatever excuse it is, you know, explain to people how to do it without just having to buy your program. Give a little tips and tricks, and then we'll talk about.
So if you're in Florida and there's a $300,000 house for sale, the bank says put 3% down, and we'll put up the other 97% of the money. That's called OPM, other people's money. In this case, it's the bank money. So you know what is 1% on $3,000? $300,000? It's $3,000. What is 3%? It's $9,000. So you have a $9,000 down payment. To basically,
but then your mortgage is so high. How are they going to afford that?
Well, that depends depends on a couple of things. Are you moving in as a single person and you're going to find four or five other people that you're going to rent to that are going to help you cover your mortgage? Because it's like, oh no, it'd be way more prissy and fun for me to have the house for myself, but maybe you can't afford it. So you got to get creative and you got to think a little outside of the box. Maybe the house is a duplex. Maybe there's a family living in one side and you're living in the other side and someone is helping pay for that house for you.
Got it. So the point is think outside the box, think of ways that you could charge rent so that you could be able to live there and have other people help you or pay the full amount of rent.
Yeah, because
listen, I live in Florida where you see a lot of these homes. They have these guest homes that are almost just as big as the main house. You know, they might not be as well done, but I mean, it doesn't really matter. And you could rent it to a couple different people or one, and that could help or actually cover the entire amount.
You got it. And that's the way people
thinking
these days. You got to get creative and think outside the box. My very first house, I rented the basement and covered my mortgage, right? My second house I bought, was three times bigger than the house I was living in. And I chose to rent it out and make a positive cash flow rather than living in the nice dig. So part of that is a principle I have called delaying gratification, something that society like just absolutely doesn't get today, which is I delayed what I wanted for 5 years. I didn't own a single luxury anything. But 5 years later, I was a multimillionaire and I could travel the world, drive any car I wanted and pretty much do anything that I wanted. And I moved into a custom built 10,000 square foot house on the golf course that I custom built. Why? Because I delayed gratification.
But like people will say, again, devil's advocate, but what about the liability of having someone that you don't trust, you don't know, living in your basement? You know, how do you deal with that? Give some strategies on how you pick the right person or, you know.
Well, first of all, what you're talking about is risk. And most people have a really bad relationship with risk. They think that risk is bad. But I want to be clear. If you don't take risks, you're never going to get a reward. The secret is to actually take the biggest risks where you mitigate it, and they're the most intelligent and calculated risks so you can get the biggest upside. You know, imagine the hundreds of homes that I own. I don't even know the names of the tenants that rent out these homes. Wow. But why does it work? Well, it's because it's a calculated risk. It's based on financial data. For example, my average renter has to make $60,000 a year. Why? Because when a renter makes less than $60,000 a year, like 30 or 40, they tend to trash a house. They tend to not make their payments. $60,000, they start treating the house like it's their own. There's a level of respect that they have for other people's property that is associated with socioeconomic status. So that's one of my top hats is you got to make $60,000 a year on up or else I'm not going to rent the property to you.
How important is it to surround yourself with people that are successful? And not only that, but like have a partner, meaning your wife, your husband, whoever it is, that is a good, you know, person to lean on. Like how important do you think it is to have these people versus leaning on yourself?
So there's a very common, in the world of personal development, there's very, very common stat they talk about. They say that you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And I remember when I heard that, I said, this is weird. I'm going to do an experiment. I wrote down the five people I spent the most time with. I wrote down their average incomes, And then I averaged out all five incomes. And it literally was the amount of money that I was making. And I was like, oh my gosh, holy shit. I am literally making the average of the people I hang out with because birds of a feather flock together. And I was challenged when I started introducing a mentor that made over $10 million in real estate, just adding that one person changed my behaviors, changed my thinking, changed everything. And within years, I became a multimillionaire. And then I was like, I need to have billionaires. Well, so last week I was in Miami and for my foundation, I was hanging out with my friends that sold their last company for $1.6 billion. They think different, they talk different, they act different. And by having in my inner circle, does it impact my perspective and my perception and the opportunities that I have in the world? 100%, hands down.
So if people want to sign up for this Clever Summit, they obviously will be surrounded by very successful people that have done it, that have proved it. I know that Ryan Serhant will be there, Patrick Bet-David. What will we be hearing from them and from you? Do you guys get up on stage and give speeches? Like, tell me exactly what happens there.
Yeah, so there's going to be 20 speakers there. Patrick Bet-David, I think he's being paid a lot of money to come out and do an economic update on what's happening in the economy. Yeah. Ryan Serhant, that just launched his Netflix show about, you know, realtor work down there in Florida, Miami. He's actually going to be there speaking on stage. Pace Morby, who has his own TV show, is going to be there sharing his strategies on subject to strategy. I'm going to be there sharing my buy and hold strategy. So the event is going to consist of 20 different experts that are going to be speaking about their niche and how it's working right now in today's economy. And then the other half of the event is literally networking and connecting with the other people there. So you can find partners and deal flow and basically, you know, cause some huge financial level ups in your life.
Right. And what is your buy and hold thing that you're going to be talking about, strategy? Tell me a little more about that.
I'm going to be talking about the last several thousand deals that I've done. And okay. I'm going to be talking about an alternative to 401ks and IRAs. I'm going to be sharing with people a passive way to take their money out of 401ks and IRAs that are earning them 4 and 5% or even equity in their home, and then how they can put it into real estate passively, turnkey, without getting their hands messy, and earn 27 times more money than the stock market, mathematically, statistically proven.
Wow. Okay. Very interesting. People should definitely sign up for this. What, the last question for you, what are the most significant trends you're seeing in real estate today? And how do you expect these trends to evolve over the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah. So if you take a look at multifamily versus single family, multifamily real estate is overbuilt, and it's going to be overbuilt for the next several years. That means that it's not a smart place to put your money because it's on the decline. Single family, we haven't caught up since 2008. We're missing 6.2 million homes. And if we work our butts off as a country for the next 10 years, we might finally finish covering the missing supply for the demand that's out there, which means that single family real estate for the next decade is going to be the hottest asset class in all of real estate, with the highest appreciation, with the highest price increases, and with the highest ROI. So that's where I'm putting my entire focus for the next decade, single family real estate. I go so far as to say that anyone buying single family homes in the next 6 months here, 12 months here, over the next 5 years, you're going to see record high appreciation on those homes. So anyone that says, shoot, I'd love to become a millionaire, or if you are one, I want to become a multimillionaire, then come to Clever Summit and learn about which single family homes that you can buy literally and have manage and run themselves, because it's just transferring equities and 401ks and IRAs into a different asset class that is simply more lucrative.
You are a best-selling author. You are a business coach. You're a breakthrough mentor. Tell people that are listening and watching where they can get a hold of you and find you besides the summit.
If you go to @ChrisCrone on any social media platform, you're going to find me there, except for OnlyFans page. I don't have one of those, but you're going to find me you're going to find me just about anywhere else.
Okay.
And we'll connect.
And how can people sign up for the Clever Summit?
If you go to chris.cleversummit.com, spell it K-R-I-S, chris.cleversummit.com, grab tickets. The event will completely be sold out. There's two yachts. Dr. Dre's yacht is going to be, you know, at the Clever Summit. We're having a huge yacht party the night before. We're renting out a huge club for one of our big networking events. It's going to be a party. It's going to be fun. It's going to be inspiring. And if you come really prepared, like, to want to do deals, you're going to find deals.
And just so I know, if people that are listening are really thinking about this, if someone wants to get into the real estate market and buy their first home, and it could be, you know, I think that the hesitancy is that people look at you and they see how successful you are. They see your Instagram. They see you running with, you know, the big guys, and they're looking at houses that are very small and they don't have a lot of money. Can they hire you to advise them on how to do this and find maybe potential partners and all this stuff? Is that what people can do with you?
Or better, I'll just do it for them. That's what I have 1800 partners, and they basically say, Chris, I'll partner up. I'll put up the money from my 401k or IRA or home equity. Your team will do 100% of the work. We'll get the highest ROIs that you have in your 21-year career with this. We'll split the money equally, and basically everyone's way better off than they would be on their own.
And tell me what people need to have in their pocket to come and work with you then? I mean, can they say, I can only invest $10,000?
Honestly, I don't care what you have in your pocket. I care about one thing. How hungry are you? If you're motivated, I will provide a path forward for you.
Amazing. I love it. Do you read your DMs if people want to reach out to you?
Yep. Just DM me, connect with me, get in contact anyway with me, and me and my team will reach back out.
Awesome. You guys, I think this is really important information. I think it's exciting. I think everyone is looking for a purpose and something to do. And if you are hungry, that I agree that that is the biggest thing. You can't sit around. You got to move forward. You got to get up and want to do something. But this is something you can get excited for. So, Chris, thank you so much for doing our show.
You're welcome, Rachel.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.